Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here, coming at you with another episode of my podcast. And today I have Scott McKillop. Da, da, da.
Thank you for that intro, Sarah. That's the best intro. Thanks.
You like that? Okay, good. Indeed. I mean, nobody intros me like that. I'm waiting for reciprocity here. I never get it. So Scott is actually the CEO of First Ascent Asset Management. And today we're going to be talking about a topic near and dear to all of you financial advisors' hearts, fees.
Fees, of course.
Is 1% dead and gone? Maybe, maybe not. Depends on the circumstances. But we're going to talk about how you can make those circumstances work for you and your practice, whatever the fee level may be. So, Scott, just first before you jump in, tell me really quickly, what are you working on nowadays?
Well, we're just trying to build First Ascent. We started the company actually almost exactly 3 years ago, and we had a number of new ideas, what I thought were new ideas about how to build a good business in the outsourced portfolio management world. It's a business I've been working on for over 25 years now. And so we're just, you know, without getting into the details of it, that's my life these days, just trying to build the company.
So what does the company do?
So we provide outsourced portfolio management services to financial advisors. The most notable thing about our firm is that we provide those services on a flat fee basis. So we charge $500 per year, per portfolio, per account, regardless of the size of the account. So if you brought us a $4 million account, we actually have a $4 million account we just brought in the other day, that client is paying $500 a year for our asset management services. And we have a $1,000 household cap, which makes it even more appealing to clients who have multiple accounts.
Right, like people who get a million kids like me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and me too. So yeah, yes. No, it gets, you know, some households get pretty complicated, and even a $500 fee can add up. So we cap the households at $1,000 a piece.
Is that why you introduced flat fees to the asset management world?
So there were two reasons. One was I just saw the technology was there to be able to do it. You know, I'm a little embarrassed. I actually didn't see it earlier, but really the technology has been there for some number of years now, where firms like ours who are just providing the asset management services can manage a $100,000 account for the same amount of work it takes us to manage $1 million account. So there's really no difference. It just, the logic wasn't there to continue to charge an assets under management fee schedule to our clients. The other reason was it was kind of the holy grail in marketing is to find a good differentiator that's very clear and simple for people to understand, and is an obvious benefit. So the flat fees really was just a great business idea from our perspective. It was a way to get out into the market, start a new company, and have something that was just very clearly different from what everybody else on the planet was doing.
How does this work for an advisor?
Well, so the advisor comes to us, they bring their clients' assets to us. It's actually, we've stolen a lot of technology from the robo advisors. So once you get trained up as an advisor, you just go on our website, start the account opening process. You can generate proposals. You can
okay, hold on. Ding, 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 ding. Interruption.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yep.
So does that mean that people can open an account for their clients online without having to fax and send in papers?
Absolutely. That was part of what I'm talking about when I'm saying the technology has been there for a while now. But a lot of people just haven't taken advantage of it. And so as a new company, we were able to start everything from scratch using the new technology that was available and gain a lot of efficiencies, I think, that other firms just didn't have.
So does the advisor get charged the flat fee, or do you debit it out of the client's account?
Most of them are taken from the client's accounts, but some advisors want us to charge them directly. So we're very flexible in terms of how we do the billing. The default approach is to debit the $500 from the client's account on a quarterly basis. So we take a quarter of the $500 per quarter at the beginning of the quarter, and it comes out automatically. Nobody has to do anything. We take care of all the billing. And we bill the advisor's fee too and send them their fee.
Okay, so this seems like a gift from above, but in reality, what are some of the gripes that advisors have about this?
Yeah, well, I think most of them view it as a gift from above. There are advisors, you know, whenever you have something that's new like this, people are skeptical and wonder, you know, what's the catch? You know, where's the gotcha? So, you know, a few of those would be, number one, you know, is the quality good? You know, we're managing portfolios for people's clients. And so people want to make sure that what we're doing is, you know, it's not some discount version of portfolio management. So that's, you know, that's an issue people ask about. I think once they see the quality of the people at our firm and the CFAs and PhDs on our investment committee, they are pretty quickly convinced that what we're doing is solid, and they can ask and learn about our investment process and so forth. So that's one, you know, is, you know, because people do associate low cost with low quality. Number two is a little bit more subtle, and advisors sometimes think, hey, this is great. And then they pause and they think about it for a minute and say, let's see now, if I do this, is my client going to ask me if I, you know, if I'll charge flat fees?
Well, hold on. Oh, stop right there, Scott. Advisors, by the way, the industry is moving towards retainer flat fee.
Yep.
Anyway, I mean, I hate to say it because I think it's still in, I guess you could say, beta stage. I don't think we've perfected this model just yet. And I have tons of reservations about the state of it at the moment. But I do think that AUM fees, know how bright the future is for them. I'm pretty sure. Okay, Scott. So the advisor then says, "Well, wait. Does this mean I have to charge flat fees?"
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so they think about that, and again, we try to help them think through that process. A lot of the advisors we work with are already charging flat fees themselves or retainer based fees. And as you said, I think you're right on target. A lot of those advisors are still really experimenting with that business model. I think it'll take a long time before the industry totally transitions to a new fee model. And maybe the world goes on for quite a long time with multiple fee models available. But that's another issue that people have. And then the third issue is, can you guys actually sustain a viable business charging $500? For each account. So people say, I love what you're doing, but I want to make sure you're going to be around for the future so that you can actually keep doing this for my clients. And the answer there is yes, this is a very viable business model. You just have to kind of look at the world a little bit differently and build your infrastructure to support a modern technology kind of operational infrastructure. And then you can do this very efficiently with very few people.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, there seems to be a misunderstanding sometimes, unless you're really a heavy technology user and have used technology to scale a business, of how far you really can go on not as much money as you would think if you're able to use technology.
Yeah, no, I think this is, you know, this is what we're finding. And I think we're like everybody else. We're learning as we go. You know, we learn how to do things better and more efficiently as we move forward in the future. New technologies become available all the time. And so we've kind of committed ourselves to this pathway of trying to build a firm that's both technologically very, very savvy, but also is not giving up the human touch, you know, the human interaction with the advisors. Because I think this is where, you know, this is where I think sometimes the technology world has left advisors a little bit in the lurch, and that is that they provide great great technology, but not necessarily great client service. And so we're trying to walk the line and do both of those things.
So how is this different from? I mean, I guess you would call you a turnkey asset management, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How is this different from other TAMPs?
Yeah, so it's different in a number of ways. First of all, the fees are obviously different. So there's a difference in the fees.
But how though? Because maybe advisors don't use TAMPs or anything.
So most TAMPs are charging an assets under management fee schedule. Those, you know, are all over the map. I mean, some of them I think are really ridiculous, almost slash, I won't say criminal, but sort of criminal, you know, in the magnitude of the fees. Some of them are more reasonable. That's the model as it exists today, as an assets under management fee schedule, which again, you know, in our view, just from the perspective of what we're actually doing and the service we're providing, just doesn't make that much sense from a logical point of view. So, you know, the industry doesn't want to hear that, but that's our view, and so we're trying to challenge people on that front. But the other thing that we do, you know, we provide all the traditional TAMP services, which includes performance reporting, you know, proposal generation, billing services. So advisors don't have to do those things. We're basically trying to take as much of the operational responsibility off of the advisor's plate as possible and free them up to work with their clients, get new clients, provide new services that would help them justify that 1% fee that we talked about at the opening.
And write them blogs.
Yeah, and write those blogs and do all the things that you talk about in your writing. That they should be thinking about.
That they never have time for.
Yeah, that they don't have time for because they're too busy, you know, reading research reports on
Market Watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you get on the phone, advisors. Remember, shoot the ball. I had did that podcast.
Exactly. You can't score if you don't shoot the ball. So
who's next on my list? That should be your thought every day.
Yeah,
Up with that idea. I wake up with that idea in mind, but it's got you know, because I got so many things to take care of here.
Yeah, and I think that's the case for everybody. And so we're trying to take this very discrete set of responsibilities off the advisor's table, so they don't have to worry about it. And we'll you know, we're specialists in this area, so we manage the portfolios, we'll do the billing, we'll do all of these things, do you know, tax loss harvesting, and help them with you know, transitioning clients' assets from one account to another.
All right, but what if they say something like, "But this is only good for small portfolios."
Some, you know, some people say that, but I think I think they're wrong. You know, the portfolios that we're building, as I said, we have, you know, portfolios that are in the multi-million dollar level, and they're perfectly happy with the services we're getting. I think even, you know, especially when you're dealing with a flat fee, the flat fee just becomes a better and better deal the bigger the accounts are. So really, in some senses, our flat fee approach is designed for large accounts.
Right. Because, you know, a large account, if you think about it, if somebody's got $5 million, they're on the hook for $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
No, ostensibly, right? Or even more. Maybe they're paying commissions, depends on how it's being traded, whatever. I mean, that's like someone's salary.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? For one person, that's really, really very rich. And let's say, though, that you're not operationally complex. Let's say you don't have a lot of needs. You don't have a lot of different aspects of it. You just are very plain vanilla kind of a thing. That's easy money for the advisor. Over time, $50,000 a year coming out of your portfolio, I mean, that's not an insignificant amount of money.
Yeah, no,
especially if you're retired.
Yeah, no, this is one of the benefits that advisors get from what we do, and that is they, you know, there are very few opportunities that advisors have to go to their clients and say, "Hey, I'm going to save you $45,000 or you know, $50,000 a year, and the way I'm going to do it is we're going to move from what we're doing today to First Ascent Asset Management, who's charging a $500 flat fee, and then whatever it was they were doing before has a huge hurdle to overcome, right, from a performance point of view, to kind of earn back that 45, you know, they have to be really good to earn back the $45,000 fee that we just saved them. So what we found so far is because we're charging a low fee for our services, but we're also building portfolios that have very low internal expense ratios. So some of our portfolios have, you know, 4 and 5 basis point total internal expense ratios. So once you start adding up, you know, low internal costs, we have low trading costs, we tend to build what we call elegantly simple portfolios that have relatively few positions, so there's even fewer trading costs. You add all these things up, and we, you know, we've calculated, depending upon which one of our competitors we look at, you know, we start every year with a 1% performance advantage just out of the gate. So That's the idea that we're
I mean, for the advisors that are kind of maybe threatened by that, you know, if I'm going to save them all of this money, how am I going to justify, how am I going to still run my business at the fee levels? I mean, you may have to reduce your fees slightly or work something out in that way or offer more. But the thing is, you can have the relationship with a company like Scott's or with a robo and somehow find a way to retain that relationship, or that relationship is inevitably going to leave for somebody else and just dump you cold turkey. Because, I mean, if you look at the numbers of it, how long is this going to persist that people are going to sit there like paying 10 times as much, literally 10 times as much in some cases? How long is that really going to last?
Exactly. Exactly.
At least this way you have control.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're taking the initiative as an advisor to bring this to your clients. And, you know, those advisors who've worried a little bit about what the client's going to think about their fee, you know, they've all universally been surprised that the client doesn't focus on their fee. The client focusing on the fact they just saved whatever it is, $45,000 a year or $3,000 a year. They thank the advisor.
I would love someone who did that for me. I mean, when's the last time my accountant came to me and said something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So the client's happy and the advisor gets a benefit for being the person who brought this to the client. So
I also think that people like it when you're not too grabby or too mongering about your money.
Yeah.
You think about it, if you make up for, I mean, maybe this is just an optimistic scenario. I would never say that business changes or transitions go this well in practice all of the time. There's definitely going to be some learning here, but if someone did that, I pay a ton in daycare.
Yep.
Right? Like, I pay more in daycare, I think, than I pay in rent most of the month. Isn't that ridiculous? If my daycare provider came to me and said, "Hey, Sarah, I found a way to just reduce your cost by half," you know, like every single friend I know, I'd be like, go to her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's not that many. Yeah.
Yeah. And your next question would be, is the quality just as good? And if the answer was yes, you'd say, why wouldn't I do it? Right. I think that's the logic of it.
Right. So now how does your offering differ from a robo?
There's kind of a little sentence that I start this question out by saying, you know, we are investment people who started out as investment people and have started to use technology to provide service in an efficient way. And I think the robos are technology people who have sort of moved into the investment world. So they're, you know, they're very focused on the technology, and their technology is fantastic. I mean, I just totally applaud the arrival of robos, just for many reasons. But their technology is great. They've really brought the fees down in our industry and so forth. So they've provided lots of benefit, but they are very mechanical in their process, and they're, you know, algorithm driven and not high touch service model. In our world, we've been working with advisors for, you know, years. This is my fifth company working with advisors in this area. And so my teammates and I are very knowledgeable about advisors, what they need and how they work and so forth. So that's really the main difference, I'd say. I mean, we could go into the differences in the portfolios and so forth, but that's probably too technical and time consuming for this conversation.
Too boring.
Yeah, too boring. Exactly. But
I'm easily bored.
Yeah. We don't want to be bored.
Yeah. But the thing is about the robos, I mean, many robos, I think all of them, have not been through a recession yet. And you and I have.
Yep.
And you advisors have too. They're listening to us. But we all know what happens when the market's down 20% and people call you with tears in their eyes. I think I could be wrong about this, but I recall a few years ago, I think there was a market dive and Betterment literally just stopped trading and didn't tell anybody.
Right.
Or something like that.
Suspended trading. Yeah. Those are the things that they'll learn over the years not to do things like that. You know, there's a sense.
I don't know though, but I think that's how, I mean, you think if they've got however many, like 300,000 people, this is a massively scaled business, low touch, massively scaled. You think they're going to send out an email and they're not going to get a response back?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm giving them credit that maybe they haven't earned yet, but it's to say at a certain point, I think you learn that investors are human beings and advisors are human beings that have a relationship with their investors or with the clients. And you have to tend to that part of the business if you want to be successful. You can't just be a great investment management shop. That's part of it. You have to be that, but you also have to recognize that once an advisor has made a decision to outsource to you, you've taken on kind of a sacred trust to protect that advisor and that relationship that the advisor has with the client. So you can't just say, well, I suspended trading because I felt like that was the right thing to do. You have to think about the impact it's going to have on the advisor and what the advisor is going to talk to the client about. So that's really at this point in history, I think, is the primary difference between what we're trying to do and what robos are doing. I mean, we're obviously both low cost. We're using technology to try to do things in a more efficient way like they are. I'll even give them a credit for having somewhat better technology than we do because that's where they come from. But we're really, for practical purposes, you know, I think advisors who work with us are very happy with the technology we have. But it's that client service, not just having people available, but the mentality, you know, the understanding of this relationship that I think is really important and a big differentiator.
So how is this changing for advisors, the way that they communicate with their clients? And you mentioned the term virtual wholesaling.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a scary term though for advisors to be hearing wholesaling?
Well, you know, I think we don't necessarily talk about it in those terms with advisors because I think, you know, what they want to know is, so how are you going to interact with me and what is this experience going to be like, right? It's the same question that, you know, advisors have to think about with their clients, right? What's the client experience going to be? And so for us, it's, you know, we're interacting with the advisors, not with the clients. So we have to create a client experience for them that's an excellent one. And so we have to basically have to create a conversation that's ongoing, that they, you know, where they can go to our website, they can always get information about what we're doing. We create lots of videos, you know, after every investment committee meeting, there's a video there explaining what we're doing. We've got videos on our website that explain you know, who we are. You can meet every team member, you know, via video. I mean, it's a very intense focus on communication, because once we've taken this investment management function off of the advisor's desk, we have a responsibility to tell them what we're doing, why we're doing it, and so forth, so that the advisor can easily and seamlessly communicate back to the client and really have the credibility that they've always had when they were controlling the investment management on their own.
Mm-hmm. So that is great. And I think we've hopefully outlined for advisors some ways that you can make these adjustments in response to what is happening in the industry in a way that is proactive, gives you some control, and maybe is not going to kill your 1%.
Right, right.
So now here's for the fun part.
Okay.
Okay, so I know you've been reading some of my blogs. And by the way, advisors, probably a lot of you out there are reading. I write consistently for Advisor Perspectives, but I also have my own, of course, website. And on LinkedIn, if you're not following me there, be sure to do that because I'm publishing great content here. So one of the blogs I wrote was called Grow a Beard, Grow Your Practice.
Uh-huh.
So Scott, I want to know, is that a yes or no for advisors? Should advisors have beards?
I think all advisors, well, all male advisors should consider having a beard, right? Not everybody is made for beard. I happen to have a beard, and when I read your article about beards, I put a big smile on my face. And
that's not even an insignificant beard also. Everybody, I'm going to link to Scott's LinkedIn profile below. Yeah. That's a circle beard, I think.
Yeah, I think as you described it in your article, it was a short boxed beard. That's how I categorized it.
But it's not short. It's not really that short. Yeah, but anyway, no, okay.
Yeah,
it's like a Rumpelstiltskin beard, but it's a beard.
Right. It's a serious beard. Yeah. Well, I'm a Colorado guy and I climb mountains, and it's kind of a little bit of the Colorado mountain man look. But this is the point you were making in your article, right? Is to try to create some individuality, some differentiation, you know, establish yourself as a character, a person, a real human being. And, you know, for some people, growing a beard can be part of that. So I think that was great. I think it's like a lot of your writing, you focus on things that most people don't talk about or are afraid to talk about. And so that's
afraid to talk about is the big thing.
I love it.
It's going to be a little hated at times, but yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So now, what about this idea, this one I wrote, how to drive leads using your car?
Yeah, the car thing is a little scary because I'm imagining driving to to work next to a bunch of people who read your article and, you know, are too busy, you know, videoing themselves in their car, so they run into me. But really the car thing, I think, was important because you made a point in there, which was a really good point. I thought you said most people would rather hear what you do in your life than what you do as an advisor. And I think that's a really insightful comment because this again is part of how you make connections with your client. They could care less. Probably they don't understand most of what you do. And almost all advisors are, you know, focused on what they do, the features of what they offer. And they all, as you pointed out, sound very much the same. But your lives are different, you know. So here's the opportunity to make a big impact by focusing on things other than just the mundane aspects of what you do. And so I think, you know, I use car time as thinking time. You know, I love music and I'm a musician myself, and I used to just automatically turn on the radio and listen to music when I drove anywhere. But now I use it not necessarily in the ways that you suggested in your article, but it's my thought time. It's where I let my mind wrap around problems that it might otherwise not have the time to wrap around.
Car blog. Yeah. Car video blog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love advisors to do that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that, you may not even have to be like driving. Like you could be sitting in traffic.
Yep.
When you're taping that. So it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
No, exactly.
The pet blog, how to use your pet dog or cat as a marketing tool. I prefer dog because I'm a dog person.
Yeah. Well, I have two dogs and two cats. My wife and I, we are actually more dog people than we are cat people, but we ended up with two of each. So that's an important point too, because this is, again, in a world where everything is gray and mundane and the sameness is just stifling. This is a way to stand out and establish an emotional connection with people that you otherwise wouldn't establish by talking about your great asset allocation strategies or, you know, how you pick mutual funds. I mean, nobody really cares.
If I see an advisor, I mean, it depends on the dog, but if I see an advisor with a really appealing dog, and I've seen advisors with some dogs on their website that I felt it could have been done a little bit better. But if I see the whole thing nice and I'm intrigued by it, I can't help it. I'm curious about the dog. Like I want to talk to the advisor and say, what's your dog's name?
Yeah. Well, my wife has more, we have a lake near our house that we walk around sometimes. And sometimes she just goes by herself. She knows everybody who walks around that lake because we have this beautiful husky, and our other dog is beautiful too, but not as beautiful as the husky. And, and so people are just drawn to it. And so she has these connections and knows people that she otherwise wouldn't know without that husky connection. So yeah, very powerful.
Advisors. That's what I'm saying. If you want to be known, but aren't sure how to get introduced, take your dog I'm using dog as an example, but I'm just a dog person. Go to an affluent area. You don't even have to live in the affluent area. But no one will even ask you that question if you just walk your dog around and have your dog meet other people and other dogs. You'll meet so many people that way.
Yeah.
Now, when I walk, one of the things just makes your guard come down.
Yeah. When I walk around the lake with my wife, she, as I said, she already knows all these people. So, you know, we'll be walking and somebody's coming down the the path in the other direction. She go, oh, this is the person who owns the, you know, this, that business. And they're, this is, you know, there are three problems that they're having in their life. I mean, there, she just,
that's gets, what I'm
you know,
saying. Right. Yeah. Like unbelievable.
Yeah. Totally. Totally makes a connection in a way that, just the normal investment, jargon and chatter is never, ever going to make.
Right. Yeah. The days of the cocktail party and the, you know,
yeah.
Cigar yeah. club yeah. and everything. I mean, I'm not saying that's not still relevant, but right. yeah. who, you know, if well, that's your life, then have that be your life. Cool.
Yeah.
But I'm
yeah.
saying for people, I mean, like me, yeah, I'm not into
yeah.
I the think, whole thing. So, but I'm yeah. into dogs.
I think people just these days, they yearn for authenticity. You know, there's so many encounters we have every day with large companies and institutions that are so unsatisfying and make you feel like you're not valued. When you encounter whether it's an advisor or whoever it may be in the world who you connect with and you feel like you're having a genuine interaction, it's sort of it's so unusual these days that it's just this refreshing blast of fresh air, and I think people are drawn to that and just in a incredible way these days. I think
in the advisor's defense and in everyone's defense that's in a sales role, I think there's always this, I mean, think about how we've been sales trained, you know?
Yep.
Control the conversation. Don't let them ask too many questions. Don't answer the question. Answer a question with a question. It's just bad advice. There's so much yep. bad sales training out there. It's like, I can, and then, you know, you get these fears, also these anxieties, you know, I got to book a sale. I got to make money. I can't lose this opportunity. And yep. it makes people feel that way, but you can't think that way anymore because as you're seeing, as we're talking about here, there are too many competitors. Like advisors, you're not even competing with the advisor next door anymore. You're not. You're competing with technology. You're competing with the inability to provide value and genericism and cliche and falseness and fakeness and boredom. That's really what you're competing with because there's so much to distract and to occupy people's attention. And there's so many other lower cost alternatives out there that the idea of competing with the advisor next door that has the same assets as you and is also using Dimensional Fund Advisors and Vanguard, that's not really the competitor anymore. It's really yourself if you want to think about it. So. All right, everybody. So we're coming to the end. We're about to get kicked off of this Zoom meeting. But Scott, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me, Sarah. It's been a pleasure.
And advisors, please rate, subscribe, and review on iTunes this podcast. It has really helped me out. You know, I'm taking a lot of time here to bring you high quality content to enrich your practices. And so, you know, help a sister out, advisors. Do me a favor. If you haven't rated, please give me a good rating. Just kidding. Well, I would hope that if you're not going to give me a good rating, you just wouldn't rate me. Let's just say. Okay. But I can't tell you what to do. Honesty is always, you know, going to conquer all anyways. So anyways, thanks to everybody for listening. Tune in next time. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Sarah.